the man with the game information. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Gaming Steve, Gaming Steve. Giving the news to the nerd generation. Gaming Steve. Give me news.
Give me news.
Give me views.
Give me views.
Gaming Steve.
Gaming Steve. He got the game.
What's to see?
What to see?
What to mean?
What to mean?
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who puts the mega in Mega Man, ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I'm your host, Steven Glicker, and in this week's show, I go through the latest gaming news. I then have a special feature where I go through the best, the gems, and the most disappointing games of 2007. I think you'll be very surprised by what I have on that list. I then have my review of Xbox 360's RPG, Mass Effect. I then have the Name That Game feature, where I'm giving away a free game console. Then I have Show Mail, and then Final Thoughts. So, how is everyone doing? How's this holiday treating you all? Are you having a good one? I tell you, I have so many games, I'm just keep jumping back and forth between all the crazy games I have, because every single year they do this, but this is one of the best holidays I've seen in a while. A couple years ago when the latest Grand Theft Auto came out, that was a killer. There was way too many good games, but it seems like every single year they always call it the best holiday season ever. I don't know if this would be, I don't think this is even close to the best holiday season ever, but there's quite a few good ones between Super Mario Sunshine and Mass Effect, and just there's a lot of good games. Crysis, you know, there's enough to keep you busy. How about that? And for those of you who aren't playing games, then what the heck are you doing, and why are you listening to the show? What are you doing with your time? This is the time to sit down. It's nice and cold to go inside and play games. Oh, and something else is, though, I've been getting, you know, I'm getting back to the final people who want to help out with the show, but if you are not a writer and are more interested in more of the back-end administration parts, like, oh, I don't know, believe it or not, things like, you know, contacting game companies and things like that, I also would be interested in talking to you, because that takes up a huge amount of time. And if you want to help contribute in that manner and have maybe a background, whether it's in PR or actually want to know, you know, it's a good way to start learning how to get into that part, write to me at, you know, feedback@gamingsteve.com, and I'll send you some information about that on how you can get involved with the site. And as I said, I'm finalizing some of the new writers and contributors to the site, working on the new design of the site, just finalizing that up. And then finally, I'm actually also going to probably upgrade the server to something a little beefier. I mean, as you probably all know, it's on a dedicated server, so the site's pretty good, pretty fast, but probably it hasn't been upgraded in about 2 years, so I'm going to go to an Intel Core 2 Duo processor with improved, you know, more memory, bigger hard drive, better load balancing, stuff like that. So I'm working on that. So that will be up shortly. So look for that. Probably not till January, because a lot of people are off this next couple of weeks. So it's a little tough to get all the work done. But just a little bit of tidbits of what's going on with the show. And enough of that. Let's get into the news.
Gaming news.
So in the news this week, we have a few stories. I got printed up, let's see, more than a few, quite a few stories. I'll see how many I get through. First up, I have Crysis and Unreal Tournament 3, both underperforming. According to the NPD, which, as everyone knows, does the evaluation of sales, they're saying that Crysis has only sold 86,633 units, while Unreal Tournament 3 has sold an unbelievable 34,000 units. Wow, that's really, really low. And so a lot of people are just kind of stunned that both of these franchises are doing so poorly. And on top of that, you know, they're PC-only franchises. So, you know, they're talking about this. This is actually this is, you know, mentioned in the main news, but behind the scenes, if you talk to game companies, this is actually a big story because they're just wondering, you know, is the market shifting? Because Crysis, here's a game that's been heavily hyped. You know, it's the follow-up to Far Cry. You know, people have been waiting for this game for a long time. It's got an amazing reviews, and the sales just aren't there. 86,000 units is terrible, quite frankly, for a game like that. And, you know, what's supposed to come out for the consoles, and then it went back to PC only, and now they're wondering, you know, can you just come out with PC only games? I think you have to do a console game. And look at the Orange Box. You know, I did a, you know, feature on the site recently where I was saying, you know, what are the, you know, 10 games that nobody played, and I put Portals number one. And a lot of people have been giving me grief on that, saying, what are you talking about? Portals played by, you know, everyone they know. Maybe. That might be true that everyone you know, but the thing is that when you compare it to things like Assassin's Creed, which is going to go on to sell 5 million copies, and Guitar Hero, and Halo, and just about any, you know, mass market game, you know, they've sold approximately, they're not sure because they don't know exactly what Steam has, but when the NPD numbers came out, it placed, I believe, 6th is the placement. And it hasn't even sold more than 500,000 copies. I think it's actually sold, I wish I had the numbers right in front of me, I think it was 266,000 copies on the Xbox 360. I think that's correct. But then, you know, it's altogether has not been doing that great for a title of that prestige. I mean, this the best reviewed title of the year. It's got 3 fantastic games, and it's really not selling. You know, I guarantee if you take a look and go put it up against something like, I don't know, Marvel Alliance, you know, or some game like that, it's probably be getting beaten. And it's a real shame because Portal is a game that should be played by every single person who plays video games. Simply, it's just that good. And I think you could buy Portal alone through Steam for something like $20, I believe. But that's kind of why I put it on there, just sort of to make a point and also to show that you might think that these games are doing really well just because a game is in the press and everyone who's a gamer loves it doesn't mean that the game is actually selling. You know, it's the same way that people are always upset that when games like, oh, I don't know, like, you know, NFL, you know, Madden does so well because the people are like, oh, those aren't real gamers. Yeah, it's selling millions and millions of copies, and it's one of the best-selling games every single year, but you don't know a single person who owns that game. I know one person who owns that game and loves it to death, but other than that, I don't know anyone who plays Madden, and yet it's always consistently the top-selling games of the year, you know, year after year, while you have games like, oh, not to pick on Assassin's Creed, but Assassin's Creed, which is going to do a fantastic business, but that's largely due to PR and not necessarily, and a great marketing campaign, probably one of the best of all time, and not due to a fantastic game. While you have something like the Orange Box, which is a fantastic set of games, including one of the greatest games of all time, and its sales are definitely not going to come close to anything what these other franchises are doing. Go back to this is that, you know, with Crysis doing so poorly, Unreal Tournament 3, which is really stunning, 34,000 copies is terrible. I mean, they're just not going to make back their money. I mean, these things have to sell a lot better if they're going to start making back their money. You know, they're going to have to look into porting these things pretty much immediately to probably the Xbox 360 because it's the easiest one for them to port to. And then Crysis, I don't know what they're going to do because that thing probably can't even run on a 360 the way they've written it, at least not easily. And they'll probably try to port it over, bring it over, but who knows. And The Witcher, you know, there's a rumor going on, and I wrote this on the site, that The Witcher, which is a fantastic PC game, RPG, that it's going to get ported over to the 360. And it just goes to show you that, you know, in this day and age, you know, the PC isn't dead. There's no way you can say the PC is dead. And every year they're like, oh, the PC's dead, the PC's dead. It's not dead, but unfortunately, if you want to do a hardcore game, in the old days it used to be PC only, and then slowly in the last couple years there's been sort of a nebulous war between the consoles and the PC for the hardcore gamers, but now I think you have to basically give it up. This is sort of the final nail in the coffin. The hardcore gamers, except for MMO players, are playing on the console. It's just, you know, they're playing on the console. And the PC games, the big ones on there are the MMOs. It used to be the first-person shooters, which is why this is so stunning, because these are first-person shooters, and PCs are supposed to rule the first-person shooter market, but obviously they're not. And casual gaming, you know, web-based games, you know, games like that. And that's kind of where it's at. And I don't think you're going to be seeing with this, if these crappy numbers, you're just not going to be seeing games come out for the PC only pretty much ever. I think all games are going to have to really take advantage to multi-platform. And again, that's not necessarily a bad thing when you have a game like, but it's a bad thing when you have a game like Crysis, which is really pushing the envelope, and then you have, you know, now they're going to have to really ratchet it back and build their games around the lowest common denominator. You know, if they're going to come out with that on the 360 and the PS3 and the PC, forget about the Wii for right now. You know, they're going to have to make it work on the 360. And so, you know, they're going to have to make it work on the worst system. And realistically, that's the worst system of the three for power. The Wii is so underpowered, you know, compared to those, that they just have to come up with a completely different version for that. Which also, by the way, that's a whole other topic. It's giving developers, you know, conniption fits because they secretly wish the Wii didn't exist because it's driving them totally nuts. Because they have to really make their games for the super lowest common denominator, and they can't port them easily to the Wii, and it really loses a lot in translation. But I've talked about that one too much. Let's go to GameStop opening tournament venues. They are opening these new stores where you can play tournaments. They opened up their very first one in California, San Jose. And in December 15th, and they have 24 networked gaming stations with plasma monitors. They had, Madden NFL 2008. What a coincidence. When I just talk about that, they had that as their, you know, first game that people were playing. And the winner of the tournament wins a $1,000 gift certificate to GameStop, of course. And they're going to have tournaments usually on the weekends and championships quarterly. Personally, I love this. I've been waiting for this for a long time. I wish I had these when I was a kid. That would be great. You know, the closest I used to come, I guess, was Magic tournaments. And that was when I was in my 20s. I didn't get to do that when I was a kid or in college. But, you know, it's fun. It's fun going to the tournaments. It's fun playing games competitively like this. And it's also a lot more fun to play against someone in a room. You know, it's great over the internet. But it's, you know, for me, at least, it's a very hollow experience. It's just not the same. And that is actually one of the reasons why Koreans are so good at these games, especially the real-time strategy games and really any competitive gaming, is because they have to go to these things called bangs, which are, you know, these, you know, gaming markets or where, you know, cafes where everyone goes. You know, very few people do their gaming in private. They all do it in public spaces. So they all meet, they all compete in person next to each other, and it's a totally different experience. I mean, in college, we used to play games against each other, and then also we used to play at work. We used to play Marathon a lot against each other, and we'd all be in one big room. It sort of was a very large studio room, and, you know, which is surreal when you walk in, because everyone is facing the wall. No one is facing each other, and they're all screaming at each other. So you're all screaming to a wall, looking at a monitor like a zombie. I'm sure you've all seen this. And you walk in the middle of the room, and you're like, what is going on? But I can't wait to check one of these things out and actually probably even play a tournament. I wonder when the New York office will open. But, of course, I hope they play a game that I actually know how to play, because I have no idea how to play Madden. We have Game of the Year this year, and I have the story is that Time Magazine chose Halo 3 as their Game of the Year. They have Orange Box is number 2, Rock Band is number 3, Super Mario Galaxy, BioShock, Call of Duty 4, Legend of Zelda, Phantom Hourglass, Mass Effect, Ace Combat 6, that one I did not expect, and God of War 2. Those are their top games. So why is this big news? Why do I care? Well, it's nice to see. See, when Time and Newsweek and major publications make note of these things, it gives the medium credence. It's important to note this. It's important to say that, look, ooh, Time Magazine is, you know, picking their best video games of the year. And also, this translates into sales. You know, this is a big deal. You know, these video game companies love this. I am very surprised at Halo 3. Well, not really. You know, you have to wonder, is this because it's a hype machine? Is this because it really was a good game? I wonder who was playing it. But, it's nice to see that the medium is starting to finally, you know, get its due. And it looked like everyone was putting out their game. I mean, I was reading them Fox News did one. I believe, you know, Newsweek, of course, does one. Who else did I see? I think the Wall Street Journal did one. I mean, it was like everyone. Like, well, news, I guess Fox News and Wall Street Journal are the same now. But, you know, it was like basic, you know, these large companies that you just never see, these media, you know, conglomerates that just probably would scuff off video games are accepting it. And, you know, next we will actually start seeing, you know, the day when I start seeing not just video game reviews every so often, you know, like in the next big thing, say in Time Magazine or the other big mediums, but constantly is like, you know, when it's, you know, like you see movie reviews, that's when you know that the medium has really reached an acceptance point. And, you know, it's just a matter of time. It really is. So Blizzard has confirmed that they're making a new MMORPG. There's a whole bunch of things. First, in April, if you go through the whole timeline, I won't go through the whole thing, but in April, they said they were working on an MMO because they had a job listing, and then they had some things on their message board. But recently, a rep said, asked about this game. They said, no, it's an unannounced next-gen MMO, and that doesn't mean an expansion for World of Warcraft either. So people are going crazy. They're wondering, okay, what's it going to be? So I, you know, I wrote a little bit about this, but as I said in my piece, is I actually, of course, have known about this for a little while. They've, you know, initially met in March with a very small team to go through what their ideas were. It was actually a brainstorming session. They had no clue what they were going to do, and unfortunately, from what I heard, is that when I spoke to the guys beforehand, you know, they're very excited. They're all coming up with these really crazy ideas for new MMOs. They're, you know, they had very excited to come up with shooters and all these crazy, like, you know, type of MMOs that just haven't been done before because, you know, it's one of the requirements for the meetings. They wanted to come up with something new. And then when I spoke to them all afterwards, they were pretty disappointed. And they were all like, oh, yeah, you know, well, we came up with one. And they're very muted. So that makes me think that they probably talk the talk saying, oh, we're going to do something really fancy and do something we've never done before. But in the end, they're doing something that they've done before, tried and true, probably using a franchise that they already have. Probably, you know, you wonder, okay, let's explore each one, okay? You know, they're not going to do World of Warcraft, so that only leaves two more. You have StarCraft and you have Diablo, and that's it. Well, StarCraft is a good idea, but first, no science fiction MMO has ever succeeded, period, you know, except for EVE, and that is a weird hybrid because that's sort of like they're making that succeed come hell or high water. But other than that, there's no science fiction MMO ever succeeded, period. Although if anyone will succeed, I guarantee it would be StarCraft. That is true. If there's one that can do it, it's the StarCraft one. But StarCraft is pretty well defined in a lot of terms. And also, you have to then put things like ship combat, and you only have three sides. You know, I guess they're going to have to come up with new, you know, it's like come up with a new fourth, fifth, and sixth race for you to play, or seventh and eighth. Like, you know, they'll have to really greatly expand the StarCraft universe. Now, they can do this, trust me. They do whatever they want in the Warcraft universe. You know, people think, oh, they have this really strict doctrine, and now they make stuff up, okay? They just make it up as they go along, and they revise the, you know, the story to make it fit. And, you know, the last expansion, when they came up with the Blood Elves, you know, that was to balance the game. You can say whatever you want, but that was made one reason, and one reason only, is that more people were playing the Alliance than the Horde. People did not like playing the monsters, so they made a super duper crazy pretty race that would work for the Horde that a lot of people overseas would like, and it was heavily tested to make sure that that's the reason, and then they adjusted the, you know, the texts of the World of Warcraft universe to fit it. So don't think for a second that they are concerned about that, because they're not. Which leaves Diablo. Now, Diablo could actually work, and there's a couple of reasons. You know, one, it hasn't been explored in a long time. Two, you know, it is not exactly the most flushed out universe it has compared to World of Warcraft or StarCraft. You can do anything with that. You can just invent a whole new world. They can invent anything they want, and it is an established IP. There is a big problem with Diablo, and that is that it is not a monster success overseas that some of these other games are. But I will say that World of Warcraft was also, and Warcraft was not as big a hit overseas. It was definitely big, but nothing compared to StarCraft. So if they're, you know, they can probably say to themselves, look, we did it with World of Warcraft. We took Warcraft. We made that into a successful brand. We could probably do it with Diablo. You know, everyone's going to want to play this. It's our, you know, game. So it's not going to be a hard sell over there. And quite frankly, it's probably going to sell, you know, 10 million from day one. So they can probably, you know, come out with World of Tunacraft and it would sell a gazillion copies. But, you know, one thing about, you know, Diablo, if whatever they do with Diablo, you know, there will be demons, there will be angels. And if I had to say anything, yes, I would say it's going to be a Diablo MMO. But they were working on a Diablo 3 for quite a long time. Actually, they've been working on Diablo 3 probably for like 7 or 8 years now. And they came pretty close to finishing it from what I heard. You know, the guys up north before they scuttled them and brought them back down south. They were really, really working on it and had a whole, you know, graphic system built. Like, the whole thing was, a lot was actually done. But this is Blizzard, and they'll just scuttle anything they want and throw it away and start from scratch. And they have, well, literally unlimited cash. That is no joke. They have unlimited money and can do anything they want and really don't care. So, I do expect we will hear, if Diablo is coming out as a true single-player game, we will hear about it. Well, I don't know. Some people are saying next year, but yeah, but you know, they don't really do that. They don't really announce two games at once. They already got StarCraft II, so why would they cannibalize their own announcements? It doesn't really make sense. I think they would ride out StarCraft II until the game finally comes out, and then only then. Plus, they'll cannibalize World of Warcraft and their expansion pack. My guess is, I'm just going through this in my mind, knowing they're PR people. Yeah, what they're going to probably do is that they will, you know, keep developing the Lich, expansion for World of Warcraft. They're going to keep, you know, going with StarCraft II. When both of those come out, then they'll finally announce the next MMO. And Diablo 3, if it's a single-player game and not an MMO in any way, shape, or form, or if it's, you know, they'll announce it at first sometime in the next year, but, you know, give very little details. But if it's an MMO, they're not going to announce it at all. That's just my take. That's just the way Blizzard works. But expect to see demons, because I know, if you remember, they were supposed to have demons in World of War and Warcraft 3. That was supposed to be the fifth race, but they had to drop them because they just couldn't get it done in time. And, you know, they love demons. They just love the demons over there. So they're definitely going to get a game with demons in it. I guarantee you that. Next is NPD did a very nice report. NPD Group, they did this report where they found that 63% of Americans are gamers, whether they play PC games, console games, handheld games, or mobile devices. And players enjoy playing games in social settings, no kidding. And also that frequent and infrequent gamers alike valued the medium as a means for bringing their families closer together, and they also used it as a stress relieving activity. So again, this is not really big news. It's nice to see. It's one more thing you can use against your defense. It's like, well, everyone's a gamer. 63% of everyone plays games. No, they don't. I'm like, well, do you play Tetris? Yes, of course. Well, then you're a gamer. That counts. You know, I always say that to people, is that there's a lot more people out there who play games. My brother is a perfect example. He has probably never played a console game in his life, except for maybe the Wii. He's not a gamer, which is really weird since he and I are brothers. He just really isn't into those type of games. But when it comes to casual games, there's no one who's more into them than my brother Danny. He loves the casual market, and you know, he tells me all about the new games he's playing, and he shows me them, and you know, he just loves the casual games, and that counts, you know. That counts as being a gamer. It's just, it's not quite the same. But if you listen to my interview last week I had with Randy Bueller from Wizards of the Coast, you know, we talked about how right now there's this distinction. Oh, you're a hardcore gamer and you're a casual gamer. And, you know, there's just be gamers. The same way he's like, well, everyone likes movies, but are you a hardcore movie player? Or are you a casual a hardcore movie watcher? Are you a casual movie watcher? Oh, you're not as good as me because I'm a hardcore movie watcher, you know? And if you listen to that, it's so ridiculous. Or music or any medium, really. It's like, well, I'm a hardcore TV watcher, but you're a casual TV watcher, so you stink. You don't, your voice doesn't count because you don't know what the heck you're talking about. Well, you know, in, I'd say another 10, 15, 20 years, that argument will be gone. Period. It'll just be everyone likes to play games. Some people like to play Tetris and puzzle games. Other people like to play first-person shooters. Other people like to play social games. There won't be this class system of what type of gamer you are. And with the success of the Wii and, you know, showing games, the super hardcore games like, you know, Crysis and Unreal Tournament 3 really not making the sales that they should, is that I think, for better or for worse, the whole industry is going to start moving that direction. Next up, we have Orion, Australian developer shut down. Orion is the guys who made the MMO PvP Fury that cost approximately $13.2 million to make American, $15 million Australian. It's one of the biggest games ever made in Australia. It got very lukewarm reviews, and the company shut down shortly after this game was released. You can now play it for free. There's some pricing structure, but yeah, first of all, I knew about this game because my friends were doing the marketing for this, the guys in New York, same guys who do Gamecock, by the way, great guys, and they, you know, they sent me a copy and told me about the game, but I was like, you know, Fury, it's like, I hate PvP, and here's an entire game dedicated to PvP. I was just thinking to myself, it's like, this is not a good idea, okay? You want to, you know, the success, I always think of, I, you know, I bring up Blizzard a lot, but there's a reason. I mean, you know, they're not calling an Activision Blizzard because they're unsuccessful. You know, here's one of the most successful gaming companies in history, period, in every way, shape, and form. And their secret of their success and how they were able to get into stores like Staples and Price Club, you know, back in the day, we're talking like 10 years ago, you know, when Staples was carrying like 10 games, is because they had games that really worked on the lowest common denominator game systems and also had gameplay which appealed to a wide audience. I will take Diablo again as an example. You know, I have friends who used to go up to me who were mothers of two, you know, before I guess casual gaming really took off, and they used to play Diablo, and they loved it, and they used to tell their friends. It was so weird. It was like these women in their 30s with kids were spending their nights slaying demons. It is bizarre, but it worked, and they would not have the greatest fantastic system, and they would have Macintoshes, and that is why they were able to sell so incredibly well. You know, they, you know, World of Warcraft, same thing. It's like they were very conscious to make sure that that would work on as many systems as possible. It was incredibly low barrier to entry, and then you would play it and find something that you enjoyed in it. They go the other way. It's like, let's find a game that's super hardcore that only like the super hardcore fans will like and develop that. You know what? Maybe if that was like a $2 million game, maybe that would work, you know, if you're really keeping it small. But if you're banking your entire development studio on a MMO PvP game, yeah, you're going out of business. I could have told you that from day one. You know, it's just, it's too niche of a market. You know, unless there was some real competitive elements that made, I didn't play Fury, so I'm speaking out of my butt right now. But, you know, if you had competitive elements to say like Guild Wars has in it, like Guild Wars has the element of sport, you know, and it's a success, very, very successfully overseas. It's sold over 2 million copies. It's done very, very well. It is actually free in Asia, and then you pay to play different, you know, types of, you know, over time, and, you know, they have different ways you can pay for it. And they also have tournaments where they get money, you know, they give away, you know, millions of dollars every year. Again, they took the game and they made it into a competitive sport. This game, it's like, well, I'm killing you just to get better and better and better. You know, I get calls all the time. I'd say every few months I get a call from PR guys saying, oh, you know, we're doing this game where you have to pay for the bullets and then at the end you win money. And I know I want to talk to these guys and I almost want to talk to them and say, you know what, these games, maybe, okay, maybe in the future, maybe in 50 years from now, like this will become really popular, but, you know, it's still just way too niche. You know, it's just, it's hard enough to get people to buy a game and play it normally, all right? That is unbelievably hard, you know, but then you want to add more complexity, like, oh, well, now you have to pay to play, and then you can win money and loot, you know, it's, you're going to go, if you expect maybe 10,000 people to sign up to this, then you probably won't just be disappointed, but if you're expecting hundreds of thousands of people to, like, you know, jump onto this game, and more importantly, I'll get to that in a second, if you know, you're going to be disappointed because that's just not going to happen. And more importantly, if you're going to have 10,000 people jump onto this game and play it, this game better be fantastic. This game better be the best PvP game out there with tons of options and a really, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, if I'm really big into PvP and I'm a very small market and something already, you know, gives me what I want, which is, oh, I don't know, like, you know, World of Warcraft or some other game, why would I actually want to go and switch to another game? My friends are already here. You know, I already have good competitiveness. I'm not going to switch it over. So, again, you know, and this is really where I always look at this type of store and I think to myself, you know what? This is a marketing concept. This game failed because not of necessarily the game, but because of the market structure and being able to look and see who your audience is and who you're going to develop this game for. And as regular listeners on the show know, you know, that's what I do. I mean, that's kind of all I do at this point. You know, sure, I still develop games and stuff, but I'm at this level where, you know, at my career where this is all I do is analyze and strategize on top of where, you know, these games are going to make their sales and how they're going to make their money back. You know, I get a lot of people write me, it's like, oh, Steve, I have a great idea for a game. Okay, you know what? That's not the problem, all right? Coming up with great ideas are dime a dozen, okay? You can talk to anyone, they have thousands of ideas, all right? You think they're coming out with a new Command & Conquer first-person shooter because someone had that idea? No, they're coming up with a new Command & Conquer because it's already a brand name that people recognize. They already came off a very successful Command & Conquer 3, and they're on a roll, and they want to use that and leverage it to make a game and sell it. You know, I've said this before, Microsoft is famous for saying that they will sell a million copies of an empty box as long as it has the Microsoft name on it. And, you know, at this day and age, it's very hard to market something that's original, that's not already branded. And, you know, that's why you see 1,000 Tony Hawks and why Blizzard hasn't done a new IP in 10 plus years or however how long it's been, some ridiculous amount. And why Ubisoft, which is my next story, is going crazy and saying, you know, Assassin's Creed, it's the biggest IP ever. And we're going to be, you know, printing money. Yay. So anyhow, it's very sad that they shut down. But, you know, you guys have to start thinking these games through. I'm sorry. Ubisoft has revised their earnings. They're making a gazillion. They're doing really great. Let's see. Assassin's Creed has moved more than 2.5 million units at retail since it went on the streets. They're expecting to sell 5 million units by the end of its year, 2008 fiscal year. And originally they thought it was going to sell 3 million units. They also said a whole bunch of things that they're delaying things like End War, Brothers in Arms, Hell's Highway, Crisis 2, blah, blah, blah. That's not as important. One other thing. The publisher announced a web browser-based installment of long-running series Heroes of Might and Magic that will come in spring 2008. The strategy game Heroes of Might and Magic Kingdoms gives uprising warlords the ability to control a virtual kingdom set in the Heroes universe. And the details will sketch you right now. But yeah, I love the Might and Magic series. That's one of my favorite strategy games of all time. I played those games absolutely to death. Very excited about that. And here's something else. Browser-based strategy games. This is, you know, with new technologies coming out for the browser-based market that are way above what Flash can do, you're starting to really see browser-based gaming, and not just casual, but true gaming take off. And this, for me, is exciting, and I will be covering this a lot because this is my roots. You know, I did all browser-based gaming. This is still what I do, is website gaming and website, mostly almost all website-related activities at this day and age. So I see this. I'm very excited. I'm very curious to see how this works. You know, Wizards of the Coast is coming out with their Goblins game, which I'm in the beta right now, and it's a lot of fun. That is Flash-based, by the way. You have this game coming out. Heroes of Might and Magic, you know. You have, you know, there's a lot of these browser-based games that are coming out, and I'm really waiting for the day when someone huge is going to come out with it. You know, this is like the first step. This actually was kind of buried in this press release, but I think that's actually pretty monumental that they're coming out with such a big browser-based game. You know, and one day you will see Microsoft or, you know, Bungie or someone monstrous is going to say, oh, yeah, we're coming out with a Halo browser-based game, you know, or a strategy-type game. You know, this really only works for strategy games, but it's fine because that's my favorite genre, strategy, so... But let's get back to Assassin's Creed. So Assassin's Creed, oh man, does this game make me angry? So here is this should be studied in colleges. and I bet you it will if they're smart. This is perhaps one of the absolute greatest executions of PR I've ever seen in my life. Assassin's Creed, let's go through the history real quick. Assassin's Creed was at E3, what year are we in? 2007, 2005, you know, when it first came out, it was first announced, and it took E3 by storm. It was really, you know, it got a fantastic amount of press. People were, like, really impressed with what they saw. They had some weird, you know, graphical things. They weren't sure what was going on, and they latched onto that goodwill, and I cannot believe it, but rode that goodwill from E3 2005 for over 2 years. They managed to milk that goodwill. They continuously built up the mystery around this game. They didn't talk about anything, really. It was unbelievable. They talked about nothing in this game for 2 solid years. They kept putting their very pretty producer, you know, Jade, in front of every camera to talk about this, and she was all over the news whenever she appeared. It had nothing to do with her being a pretty female. I'm absolutely sure of it. I'm being sarcastic there, by the way. And, you know, and they didn't talk about the game. And to my mind, it's like, you know, when they do that, that usually means one of two things. That they either have some really awesome secrets and they're just keeping it from everybody, or this game is not going to be quite as good as everyone thinks and they're just hyping the crap out of what little they have. And I think it was a little bit of column A and column B, quite frankly. And they did it. They managed to pull it off. And then when the game came out, people were just excited. You know, they wanted to know what all the hype was about. They wanted to know what the secret was about. They didn't know anything about it. But in a weird way, maybe they like, well, I don't really want to know about it because it looks like it's something you don't want to know about. And I don't want the secret world to me, ruin to me. And, you know, assassins are cool and the setting looks cool and all of that. And, you know, the graphics are beautiful. So I'm going to go buy the game. And if you look at the reviews, they're like in 81. You know, the reviews have been, and I think it's a high 81 in my opinion. The game is not a bad game, but if I did a review of the game, my review would be it is a fantastic collection of concepts and ideas in a poorly executed game that gets incredibly repetitive with a terrible ending and terribly repetitive fight sequences. I'm sure that Assassin's Creed 2 will do great, and they'll probably get everything worked out. But, you know, they were able to take nothing and milk it forever. And I really hope we don't get to see this. I hope all of a sudden every single developer doesn't magically find a pretty female producer to put in front. I'm not putting anything down on Jade. She actually is a good producer, and she knows her job. It just, you know, I don't know if this was done on purpose or they just happened to catch a wave of, hey, wait a second, we're getting a lot of press by talking about nothing, and people are still putting us on, you know, every single website and every single cover because we have a female producer. You know, Morgan Webb just talked about this. She was saying, she, you know, said if she was a guy, she would never have gotten and done as well as she, you know, did. It's because she's a pretty female and that plays video games. You know, she has columns. She's able to, you know, go anywhere and talk to people about gaming. And she says, you know, the number one question she always gets is like, okay, do you really play the games? And she always has to defend herself and say, yes, she plays video games. You know, she's big into games. And I remember back, you know, in the early 90s when she was on, Tech TV, the Screensavers, one of my absolute favorite shows of all time. And she was just like an intern on that show. And, you know, she was just a, you know, your regular old crazy geek who turned into a video gaming girl. But the point is that, you know, do not always believe the hype. You know, I'm happy for Ubisoft. I'm happy that their game is making so much money. But, you know, if you ever see that again, if you ever see a lot of hype for a game with very little substance, you know, all sizzle, no steak, be wary. Don't buy the game the first day it comes out. Maybe you loved Assassin's Creed. If so, I'm happy. I really am that you loved that game. Trust me, I wish I loved every game I played. It's just hard for me to not be cynical that they, just that the way I saw them marketing that, it just kind of drove me a little nuts. And that it, and also, for better or for worse, is that it succeeded crazily. You know, it exceeded all expectations. And again, I just hate to think of things to come. Is that, you know, I'm not the only one making note of this. Every single game PR company is out there studying this and thinking that's how they're going to market their next game. And that's what makes me lose sleep at night. Next up, NPD November. They cooked up $2.63 billion in game sales. Ridiculously crazy amounts. Just November alone was $2.6 billion in sales. Let's look at the numbers, shall we, for November 2007. We have the DS. It sold, you know, the DS and the Wii together sold about 2.4 million units. The Xbox 360, 770,000. PSP, 567,000. PlayStation 2 and the PlayStation 3 sold 500,000 and 466,000 units. So why do we care? Why do we care that, you know, okay, the PlayStation 3 once again is in last place for November, and, you know, they can say, oh, you know, we're doing better, our sales are up 5,000% compared to last year, you know, Sony could go on and on about this. And why am I harping on this? Because these numbers, it's important because these numbers are used as a baseline for what they are going to sell for the entire year. And, you know, I saw these graphs coming out. They're saying, oh, look, the PlayStation 2 is going to now suddenly ramp up its sales because, you know, of magic and way bypass everyone else. Well, that doesn't happen, okay? There has to be a reason for these things to occur. If things stay as they are, their sales are going to, you know, these numbers are going to continue. You know, there can be a saturation point that can happen, but what they sell now will be used, and it's very accurate, will be used as an indicator of what they're going to sell for the next year. The same way when you ever see, you know, oh, what did the movies take in this weekend? Well, they figure that out through formulas. They can figure out what a movie makes on Friday. They can pretty accurately estimate what the movie is going to make, not only what it's going to make the entire weekend, but what it's going to make in the entire lifetime of its release, okay? The numbers have gotten to that point. What it makes in a weekend, they can use that and, you know, figure out, okay, it's made this much money in this many theaters, this much per screen. This is what the movie is going to make in the end, period. And they're very, very accurate at this. The only times these numbers get skewed is you have things called outliers. Things like, oh, I don't know, there's really heavy snowfall, you know, I'm just using movies as an example, like there's really heavy snowfall and people can't get to the movie theaters, and, or, you know, or something happens in the news with one of the stars, or something crazy happens. You know, it's very rare that that happens. So unless the PlayStation 3 basically creates an outlier, like drops their price to $199, or, you know, does something really, really radical, they are poised to sell and always be in last place for quite some time. You know, that's just the way it is. And people think, you know, I get this, oh, you're bashing on Sony. Quite to the contrary, I probably play my Sony PlayStation 2 more than I definitely play it more than my Xbox and my GameCube Wii combined. I have more PlayStation games than anyone else. I bought a new PSP, the Slim, just because I've been playing my PSP so much recently because they had so many good tactical games to come out with this thing. You know, I love my PSP right now, and I'm kind of surprised I'm saying that because there was so little out, but now there's really quite a few really good games out for it. And I really, really wish that Sony was doing better, but, you know, they miss the market, and someone's going to miss every single time, you know? No one, you know, it's like when Nintendo, it's weird, it's like when Nintendo was down, people seemed to revel in it. It was odd. People seemed to always be happy that Nintendo was so, you know, they, aha, Nintendo, they make kiddie games, they shouldn't be in first place, and now they're destroying everyone left and right, and people are generally upset. And then to add, you know, insult to injury, it's like the PlayStation 2 or PlayStation 3 isn't doing well, and it's almost like too much for them to bear. I kid you not, it's very similar to like when the Boston Red Sox won the World Series in New York. If you were a diehard Yankee fan, it's sort of like you didn't know what to do with yourself at this point. It's that you're so used to being on top. Now that you're no longer on top, you're almost embarrassed. And, you know, I couldn't care less who wins these console wars. They're silly. Because, you know what, PlayStation? They're going to come out with a PlayStation 4. Sony, I guarantee, is coming out with PlayStation 4. I guarantee there's going to be another Wii after this one. And I guarantee there's going to be another Xbox. There's probably going to be another Game Boy and another PSP. So, you know what? This is never ending, okay? This is a round in a very long battle. This is just going to continuously go on and on and on. You know, there was a time way back when, you know, Apple ruled the world and everyone had an Apple computer. And that went away. And now they're coming back slowly, but they are coming back. That's just the way it is. These things are cyclical. the point I was just making is that, you know, decels are, they're bad. And, you know, and Sony really is going to have to figure something out. And it looks like they really are trying. You know, there has been serious rumors that a Sony PlayStation 3.5 will be revealed next year at this time. Probably a slimmed down version. You know, it costs a lot of money to do that, so I don't know what exactly they're going to do, but maybe a slimmed down version, probably the same box if they're smart, because that will cost them less, and they'll just be cheaper from the manufacturer, and then they can market it for a lot less. You know, I don't know. They've been trying to do that all year. Okay, that's why they've had about 15,000 different types of bundles, is because they're constantly doing everything in their power to bring down the price of this unit and to actually hit a sweet spot, and they've been failing left and right, and it's really killing them. The other thing is, you know, I can't stand these spin. It's like I read all these spin and they're just like, oh, we're doing great, and then what was that quote by Sony saying that, you know, our games are better, period, so, you know, the Wii stinks and our games are great. You know what? I guarantee the people who are buying the Wii aren't thinking that, and the people who are playing these games casually aren't, you know, thinking that at all. But I will say, if you want to play Rock Band and you can't find it, get a PlayStation 3, because there are stacks. I went to Best Buy. There was a stack to the ceiling of unsold Rock Bands. Ridiculous. Everywhere I go, I see Rock Band, the PlayStation 3 version, totally unsold. So if you want to get it, what else? Nintendo and GameStop addressing the Wii shortage. So, you know, I have another story saying, well, you know what, I'll tell you that one first. Actually, here it is. I'll say that the New York Times said, I'm actually reversing stories, and the New York Times said that the Wii is costing them $1 billion in hardware sales, and another analyst said it was actually $1.3 billion. And with hardware sales and software, it's probably $1 to $2 billion they're losing. And I talked about this last week. It's like, you know, if you go into the store and you want to buy a Wii and it's not there and you don't want to wait, you're going to go buy something else. You know, maybe you'll buy a PSP, maybe you buy a DS, maybe you buy an Xbox 360, most likely. But that's what's going to happen. So they're not just losing the money now, but they're losing the money in the future. And they really, you know, have to do something to curtail this. They're an incredibly conservative company. Like, even for, they're just a very, 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 very conservative company. Nintendo is infamous for this. But you know what? They're almost like, yeah, almost like, wow, people like us and we don't know what to do with it. It's like they've been so used to being the underdogs, is now that they're actually winning, they're just not used to it and they don't know how to, you know, deal with it. But, you know, what they did is they announced this program this Friday, December 21st. You can go into most GameStops. You can get a rain check, which I bet you most people don't even know what the heck this is, since it's so rare that anyone does this anymore. You get a rain check, which is you can purchase the game now, which actually is kind of that's kind of a dirty tactic, because rain checks aren't supposed to work like that. But anyhow, you can purchase the game now, pay in full. You get a custom DVD Mario cover that you can use to put on the Christmas tree, and then say, you know, I guarantee you will have a Nintendo Wii by January 25th, 2008. And it's a good idea. I'm actually, you know, I was pleasantly surprised when I heard that. I was like, okay, these guys are starting to think outside the box. Good. Good concept. Good idea. But, you know, there's been, again, it's funny. It's like last year, people were talking about the Wii because it was the next big thing, and it got a lot of press. This year, like, you know, obviously there's Wii craziness, and everyone's like, oh, the Wii's, you know, it's like, it's hard to find. It's crazy. It's the hottest thing this holiday, blah, blah, blah. And they're really riding that success. But now comes the backlash, and you're starting to see, well, because the stock's been stalling, like, well, this is as good as it gets. They're going to start, you know, the sales are already going to start petering off. If you look in Japan, they started to peter off a little. But Japan's kind of like in a gaming recession right now, so I wouldn't really want to use Japan as a barometer for the rest of the world in any way, shape, or form. Especially their gaming tastes are bizarre right now. They're buying the weirdest. They're buying really weird games over there. You know, the point being is that, you know, Nintendo is starting to get this backlash, saying, well, They, you know, now they're in charge. Now they're the front runner. We're going to start seeing people start tearing them down. And I wonder who's the one they're going to champion next. That's why if Sony is smart, because if this is, you know, going through this cycle, if Sony is smart, if they can somehow get in there, whether it's through a price reduction or something, they just got to get something, some really goodwill going there. And then when the Wii gets hard, you know, that would be the perfect story. It's like, oh, the Wii is really hard to find, but Sony just did this great thing. Now you can get, you know, the PSP and all these Blu-rays and this free game and God knows what, you know, and you can easily find them in the stores. Go do that instead. But they're not. They're squandering it. They're, you know, just not taking advantage of this. And Microsoft very quietly did. You know, they came out with that pack where you get two free games when you buy the Xbox 360. So, you know, once again, you go into the store, you see, okay, I can get a PlayStation 3. Or, you know, okay, I can't buy a Wii. Let me see what I'm going to get. I'm going to get PlayStation 3, which is just a PlayStation. Or I can get, or it comes with MotorStorm. Or I can get a Xbox 360. And, hey, look, it comes with two games. Ooh, one of them is Marvel Ultimate Alliance. Oh, my kids love Spider-Man. Oh, they love those superheroes. I'm going to get that one. Okay, you think I simplified that conversation? No. That's what happens, okay? I myself am starting to do that. I cannot believe it. I myself, who knows video games inside, upside down, who follows this and does this for a living, I go into the store and I go, hey, Princess Adventures for the Wii and the DS? My daughter loves Princess Adventures by Disney. I know absolutely nothing about this game, but I know she loves princesses. I think I might buy it. Oh my God, I have turned into a zombie. What has happened to me? Oh my God. It's happening to me, trust me, and I'm informed, so it's going to happen to people who are just trying to get something that their kids like or their grandkids like. Oh, wow, this is going wild. Okay, two more stories, and then let's get into the rest of the show. This one I found funny. Soda companies are blaming video games for obese children. Not that that's not part of it, I imagine, but I don't know. Kids were playing games for a while before that. The mayor of San Francisco is going to put a tax, perhaps, on sugar soda or anything made with high fructose corn syrup in the area. And the Beverage Commission, the ABA, said, oh, what is the exact quote here, is that they should go after computer and video game companies because they lured and kept children indoors when they should be burning calories outside. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I can see both points, but, you know, when I was a kid, they didn't have soda machines inside schools selling Coke, you know, these companies, they're very sleazy the way they do this. You know, what they'll do is that they'll go to these boards that have very little money to begin with, or, you know, are always struggling, these education boards. They'll say, look, we'll put, you know, if you allow us to put your soda machines in the school and we'll have, you know, healthy stuff, but we'll also have regular soda, we'll give you money. We will subsidize your budget. And wow, what a surprise. They do it. You know, they put soda machines into school, and then suddenly the kids have access to sugary snacks they might not have had access to before, and they're getting heavier. So I'm not saying, you know, that is the only reason. Trust me, I am quite sure that video games are also a big part of it. I have very close friends who absolutely positively refuse to allow their kids to play video games in any way, shape, or form because they do not want their kids to stay inside all day. I myself have seen it. I myself was very active, did karate, did hockey, did crazy amounts of activity. So trust me, I got more than my fair share of activity. But the thing is that I can definitely see these kids going out and, you know, just zoning in front of the TV and not going out and doing anything else for hours and hours at a time, especially today. Like when I was a kid and we used to play video games, it would be like, you know, Atari 2600 and television. And as much fun as those games were, they're not the type of game that would suck you in for hundreds of hours of time into a really, you know, truly mesmerizing world. Although the Apple II Plus game sort of did. But still, it wasn't the same. Like nowadays, you know, you can sit in front of your computer all day, all night and have everything to you. You want to watch TV, you can do it through your Xbox 360. Want to talk to your friends, you can do it through the Xbox 360. Want to play video games, you can do that through your computer, Xbox 360. You know, everything you want to do is now available to you, so you can be more lethargic. But I would say that, you know, allowing kids to drink soda and sugary snacks inside schools, that's kind of a big problem too. And finally, this just broke today. E3 is returning to LA Convention Center. Next July remains invitation only. It's weird. This was making news everywhere, big news. And this is one of those things I think, wow, everyone in the industry wants to hear about this, and everyone outside the industry probably couldn't care less, because if it was invitation only, you weren't allowed to go to E3 last year. What do you care if you have to go this year? Oh, it's in the LA Convention Center, and it's going to be a lot easier to get around, and I'm still not going. Who cares? It's on July 15th to the 17th. It's invitation only, as I said, about 100 times. I will say, I didn't even go last year because I was so busy. The first time I ever missed an E3, I got an invitation, but I didn't even bother because I had a zillion other things to do, and actually I ended up going to Gen Con instead and had a much better time than I ever had at any E3, which is really saying a lot. Well, I'd say it was a different type of fun, but it is going to be better. That, and everyone I spoke to said it was a total nightmare getting around, and you know, it just was a disaster. So having it in the convention center will at least, actually now I'm excited to go, because that at least it sort of would feel like a regular E3, and having it in the convention center will be so much better than having to jump around. I'm actually glad I didn't make it last year, because that had been terrible to take all those buses and all that junk and all that stuff. So that's it with the news. Let's get to the best games, the gems and disappointments of 2007.
Feature.
So everyone's making the list for the games of 2007. I really am not going to put together a hardcore list. I just sort of did a little bit of notes of sort of what I thought was some of the better games out there and kind of why. And let's instead of going, I'm trying to wonder what should I do with the order. Yeah, I'll go through the best, and then the hidden gems, and then the most disappointing. So from my best games of 2007, The Witcher I thought was superb, and rumors are it's going to come out for the 360. I guarantee you it will, pretty much. That is a great game. I would definitely check that one out. Puzzle Quest, wow, that is a good game. If you have not tried Puzzle Quest, you owe it to yourself. It's out on every platform known to mankind. It is bizarre. It is bejeweled with RPG elements, and it works beautifully. It's not a game that people that are casual gamers will enjoy. It's like a hardcore puzzle game, if there's such a thing. But I love that game. The only disappointing thing with that game is it takes like 100 hours to win it, and I've played it probably a good 50 hours, and I'm only halfway through. And I don't know if I'll pick it up again, but boy, that game is a long game, but oh, it is awfully fun. And you think you're good at puzzles, wait until you play this game. You're going to become like the Garry Kasparov of Bejeweled, because you will see 15 moves ahead. It really makes your mind really go crazy. God of War 2, of course, one of the greatest action games of all time. God of War 2 was so good. Oh man, you thought God of War 1 was over the top? God of War 2 has Kratos taking on the entire pantheon of gods and then hooking up with the Titans, which is so cool. You know, basically he's like, you know what? I'm going to kill everyone. I'm just going to kill all the gods, and then I'm going to go after the parents of the gods. So the graphics are great. The only disappointment is that there was a cliffhanger at the end. So, you know, I'm going to have to wait until God of War 3, but wow, what a fantastic game. I say this all the time, because I've had friends who come over, and they just play God of War, and they can't put it down. Buy a PlayStation 2, you get them dirt cheap used at GameStop, and buy God of War, which you get for like $10, and God of War 2. And that's it, okay? If you never buy anything else, just buy that, okay? I guarantee you're going to love it. It is so good to rent one. Doesn't Blockbuster still rent those game consoles? I don't know if they do anymore, but they used to. It's, you know, just play this game. It's really good. Crysis. You know, Crysis is so crazy. I can't believe it's not even doing that well. You know, the thing about Crysis is that it's almost like a simulation environment. When I play the game, okay, the game is fun, but I go scuba diving. If you go under the water in Crysis, that is what scuba diving is like. It's like, wow, this is what it feels like. This is what it looks like. You know, their attention to detail is insane. You know, you're pushing things out of your way. When you go up against a tree, your gun gets, you know, goes up. You know, it is scary. It's like, okay, let's simulate real world as much as possible and put a game around it. Crysis will always, it'll do well in the long run, I'm sure, but, I don't know, I have a crazy powerful machine, so I run it fine, but, you know, hopefully your machine can run it. If not, just wait a little while and then you get an upgrade, or it's an excuse. That's what I always say to people, it's an excuse to upgrade your machine, okay? The Core 2 Duos, which are super duper crazy, insanely fast, are so cheap now, you can get a fantastic system for nothing. Just go upgrade your system. Super Mario Galaxy is probably the greatest platforms of all time. It's accessible to hardcore gamers as well as casual gamers. Friends can play it with you. They can help you collect stars while you're playing. You know, this is, I'm a huge, you know, fan of the platformer, but I would say that this was one of the greatest platformers of all time. Much better than Super Mario Sunshine, which was terrible. Neverwinter Nights 2, Mask of the Betrayer. That was the expansion that came out for that game. If you really like role-playing games, if you really like D&D, play this game. You can pick it up. You don't have to play the first one at all. It starts you at level 20 or level 18 to 20, which is pretty much the highest level, and then you go from there. So you start out as a god, and you turn into you start out as a demigod, and you turn into a god by the end of the game. But really good dialogue. You know, I'd say if BioWare, if this was 5 years ago, this game would be up there with any BioWare game to this day. That's how good it is. You know, the bar has been raised quite a bit, but it is up there with some of the best BioWare games. It's just that good. Metro Prime 3, Metro Prime 3. I love Metro Prime. I loved the first one. And when you play Metro Prime 3, it feels like the first one, sounds like the first one. I wasn't so much thrilled with the second one, but this one is a really good game. Command & Conquer 3, Tiberian Wars. That is the craziest real-time strategy game I've played in a long time. Very fast, very intense. Really enjoyed it. It's not even like a real-time strategy game. It's like an action game. And multiplayer, I actually enjoy multiplayer because games last like 10 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes. And you're like, oh, I died. Okay, let's go again. Okay, let's go again. Okay, you know, you can play it 10 times in an hour, which is fun. You know, these games that take 2 hours to play and one person wins and then, you know, you can see them winning half an hour into the game. That's not fun, you know. Let's see what else. Super Paper Mario. You know, I liked it quite a bit. It's a little slower paced than probably what people are used to, but it was innovative and a fun game. I didn't see anyone put that on their list. BioShock was, of course, you know, everyone's game of the year, blah, blah, blah. Great game. We've all heard about it, but actually I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. It was a lot of fun, and it has one of the absolute scariest, freakiest levels of all time in the game, so I'll give it big kudos for that. Mass Effect. I'm going to review Mass Effect, but I will say when it comes to just probably the best book I've ever read or in a long time was Mass Effect. The gameplay I'm not so sure about, but the reading and the writing was top-notch. And Call of Duty 4, that is, oof. If there's anything, it was like playing a Michael Bay movie. Call of Duty 4 really was like that. It's definitely worth it to check out. I didn't play it for a while. I just played it recently, like last week, and all my friends were talking about it, and I was like, wow, this the first level is pretty intense. But what was my game of the year? I'll talk about that. That's my last thing. So let's go to some gems. Here are some games. I put up a whole bunch, but I'll give you some other ones that people didn't talk about. Oh, I totally forgot. Oh, so Orange Box. How can I forget Orange Box? But yeah, you knew that. I was going to talk about that. Go buy Orange Box. It's not been selling as well as you think. Go buy it. It's worth it. It's great. Half-Life 2, Episode 2 is much better than this Episode 1, although I liked Episode 1 quite a bit too. But Episode 2 is even crazier. The only downer is the ending is so much fun that you're disappointed when it ends. You're like, damn, it was like a real high point, and you're like, and it ended? I wanted more. But Portal, of course, one of the greatest games of all time, period. And Team Fortress 2 is so much fun. I actually had to stop playing it because it was taking up too much of my time. But some of the hidden gems, I'll just go through a whole bunch. Mr. Robot. It's a PC game. It's kind of a puzzle game. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. I would definitely say check it out, Mr. Robot. It's hard to explain, but it's puzzle elements and role-playing elements all mixed together and a little bit of action. Is that you just have a robot that's sort of a maintenance robot that has to go around this robot world, interacting with other robots and getting through the world of robots. You're starting to see why it's called Mr. Robot. And trust me, it's a good game. It's worth it. Grim Grimoire for the PlayStation 3. It's a good action fighting game. I would recommend it. You know, well, if you have a PlayStation 3, you kind of have to buy that game anyhow, because there's just not that much out there. Actually, Uncharted is also up there. I just started it, so I can't really say if, you know, but everyone's saying how good it is and how great it is, so I'm going to give it a unplayed pass to at least, plus if you have a PlayStation 3, there's not much out there anyhow. Hotel Dusk, Room 215. I probably would have put that on my list online, but, you know, this is like probably number 11 game on that list. It's good. It's like a book. It's like an interactive book, and it's, you know, if you've played any of the Ace Attorney games, you know, Phoenix Wright games, this is right up your alley. It's similar, but a different style to it, but it's similar. It's similar enough that you would know what's going on, and you'll probably appreciate it, like it. Another one, Ratchet and Clank Size Matters for PlayStation 2. Where'd this game go? This was a really good game. It has some crappy load times, which drove me nuts, but if you like platformers and you have a PS2, this is a fun game. I enjoyed that a lot. Folklore, again, another PlayStation 3 game you sort of have to get. Grim Grimoire. You know what? I totally messed up. Sorry. Grim Grimoire, you're probably saying, you idiot, Steve. Yes, no, Grim Grimoire was a PlayStation 2 game. It's like Grim Grimoire and Folklore, I got the two mixed up. Grim Grimoire, the PlayStation 2 game, was a real-time strategy game made by Vanillaware, which the same guys who did Odin Sphere. And it's not quite as good as Odin Sphere, but it's worth checking out. It's definitely worth a rental. So I would say check out Grim Grimoire for the PlayStation 2. And then, sorry, Folklore, which is like an action role-playing game for the PlayStation 3. So, I know if you cursed me out because I was stupid. I was saying, what the heck am I talking about? You're right. Another crazy game, Chili Con Carnage for the PlayStation 2. People are like, what the heck are you talking about? This was a game that came out a couple of years ago that did absolutely nothing. It is a really weird action game, but I don't know if you really run PlayStation 2 games, but look it up. It's a Chili Con Carnage. It's pretty fun from beginning to end, and definitely will keep you entertained. Deadhead Fred, another action game for the PlayStation 2. It's okay. It's weird. I have a lot of friends who love this game. I played it. I felt it was very good, but it couldn't hold my attention. But I'm give this one, put it on my list anyhow, because I had enough people who like this game, and the voiceover work is really good. And the story is great. Actually, the story is pretty good. But I would say, you know, if you're into platformers, give this one a try. And what else do we have? That's sort of it for my hidden gems right now. But let's get to the most disappointing games of 2007. So everyone's going to be stunned when they see this list, I think. But I'll tell you why, everyone. Okay, Manhunt 2. Manhunt 2 is because, you know what? The first Manhunt was actually not a bad game. It actually was pretty good, except for when it became a first-person shooter. But up until that point, it was actually a pretty decent game. And you can see what they took and what Rockstar took from Manhunt. They put into The Warriors, which was one of my favorite games, period. So Manhunt 2... You know, it's a bad game. It only sold like 13,000 copies, so I guess not all press is good press. But that game probably could have been a good game if it actually got to, you know, maybe be released the way they wanted it to be released, and if they didn't try to really turn it into something it shouldn't have been, which is like the poster child for violent video games. And now everyone is rallying. Like, if you're going to rally against the game, at least if you're rallying against Grand Theft Auto, it's doing really well. But if you're rallying against Manhunt 2, who cares? Who cares? What a disappointment. Halo 2 for the PC. And Vista, come on, Halo 2, that was your big game. That's what you had to do, is come out with Halo 2 on Vista. No one cared. And right up there is Shadowrunner. Shadowrunner, are you kidding me? Everyone was like, oh, yeah, it sounds like a good game. And then I told my friends, oh, yeah, there's no first-person aspect. It's all multiplayer. Like, what? It's all multiplayer? I'm not buying that. Why would I care? Okay, you know, it's like, again, don't build a game because you and your friends like it, okay? If you like, I know a lot of people like multiplayer, and a lot of people took umbrage to my list saying, oh, they didn't like the darkness because there was a bad multiplayer element to it. I give you credit for that, but you know what? Not everyone cares about multiplayer. If you want multiplayer, the darkness is not your game. If you want a really good, strong first-person shooter with a pretty interesting story that goes throughout in a really cool setting, the darkness will do it for you. Sure, it gets a little repetitive, but, you know, Shadowrun, come on. It's like a first-person, you know, a multiplayer game, that's all it is. No wonder the sales were poor, because you know what? That's not going to sell, okay? Period. Supreme Commander. Oh, Supreme Commander, supreme disappointment. Okay, I guess if you really, really like incredibly deep real-time strategy games that will take hours for you just to get started, but you know what? Which is really even disappointing for me, because Total Annihilation is one of my favorite games of all time and probably my favorite real-time strategy game ever. So I was really looking forward to this. And maybe I'm older. Maybe if I played Total Annihilation, I wouldn't enjoy it as much as I used to. But I just felt like Supreme Commander was like building and 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 then fighting and then building for another 15 minutes. Really is way too slow. Command & Conquer 3 is more my star. Stalker. You know, Stalker was supposed to be so much. Not that it's a bad game, but, you know, it was supposed to be a really cool game where you're up against other people and doing really cool things up against other stalkers, and the AI was supposed to be great. It was all right. You know, it's passable. I mean, the best part is when you do go to Chernobyl, and that is pretty cool, though, I will say. Okay, here we go. BioShock. What? BioShock? Isn't that like everyone's game of the year? Yeah, okay. I'm up there with Yahtzee, who says that, you know, BioShock, if you've played System Shock 2 and then you played BioShock, you'll enjoy BioShock when you play it, but then it leaves a really bitter aftertaste in your mouth afterwards, saying, wow, you know what? That was System Shock 2 in every way, shape, or form, except it was super-duper crazy, insanely easy. And, oh, yeah, you can't die. You're resurrected every single time you die. And, oh, yeah, you know, it's just really dumbed down. But I will say the story is very good. You know, the graphics are fantastic. It has some very intense levels. You know, the little sisters and big daddies are some of the coolest monsters of all time. But if you play the original, like play BioShock and then play System Shock 2, just play System Shock 2, which is just a vastly superior game. Maybe, you know, this is one of the downsides of making everything come out for the console and really, you know, making everything lowest common denominator. And they're getting rewarded for it. And I think we're going to start seeing that more often. You know, they can do it. The Super Mario Galaxy is one of those super rare games that can make it both challenging and, you know, for you know, experienced players, and easy for people who are new to the genre. Unfortunately, I think BioShock just made the whole game a little too easy. So it is an awfully fun game to play, but afterwards you might wonder, you know what? That wasn't quite what I thought it was going to be. Blue Dragon, come on, the pedigree in those guys, you know, some of the best, you know, game designers of all time. This game was supposed to be a big hit. I couldn't wait for it to come out. I played it. I like fell asleep while I was playing this game. It was so crazy boring. Oh my God, that game stunk. Assassin's Creed. You heard me go on about Assassin's Creed. Okay. Amazing concepts that repeat themselves ad infinitum to a point of there's no game. I think Assassin's Creed 2 will be very good. I think it was a good rental game, but it is, you know, and it, but if you think, oh, I'm going to play another Prince of Persia, it's like Prince of Persia 4. No, it is not. I do think, you know, we have a lot to see from them. And don't worry, you're going to see Assassin's Creed 2, Assassin's Creed 3, Assassin's Creed 2.5, 3.5, you name it. Time Warp, whatever. It's going to go crazy. Mass Effect. Well, I'll talk about Mass Effect. Mass Effect, I felt, I do review it, but I felt it was a very rushed game. Not very, but I'll say it was a rushed game, and it just wasn't everything it could have been. But this is probably the toughest game I've ever had to review, because it does so much so well and so many things so poorly. So it's sort of the poor aspects that I kind of felt bad about, and it kind of disappointed me, especially after waiting for it for so long. Lair. Did Lair have to be good? why, oh, why did they have to make it use that stupid controller? Like, okay, PlayStation 3, Sony, guys, look, just release good games, okay? Forget about justifying the reasons for changing your hardware, okay? No one cares, all right? Okay, you got so much, like, this game was supposed to be a big game, supposed to be a big rally cry, flagpole game, or tentpole game, and it wasn't. And in fact, it's done the opposite. It's on everyone's worst of lists. It's gotten tons of press, and it is embarrassing. You should... All you had to do was just make the controls work, and the game would have actually probably done much, much better. But oof, instead, it's on everyone's worst of list. Legend of Zelda, Phantom Hourglass, it's on my disappointment list. I love the Legend of Zelda series. Oh boy, do I love the Legend of Zelda series. But boy, this, you know, it kind of was a rehashing. And it just, you know, after the Minish Cap, which was so good, and it really, like, turned the whole series on its ear, you know, this was just sort of like a revamping of everything we've done before. And I guess there's some comfort in that, but I just kind of wish it was more unique. I'd say just go play the Minish Cap again instead. That was a vastly superior game. And then finally, the number one most disappointing game of the year is, if I had a drum roll, I'd put it here, Hellgate London. Oh my God. I am so glad this game finally came out, because every single time I saw a cover, it's like this game was getting so much press. So crazy. And I played it. I actually enjoyed it at first. I got sucked into it. I got into the one more, you know, slot machine mentality of like, okay, let me just increase my guy a little bit better, make him a little bit better, just keep making everything a little better. But you know what? It wears on you. It just doesn't have the same oomph that Diablo does. You know, here's a game that was supposed to, you know, be the next Diablo. It was by Bill Roper, who, you know, was the greatest designer of all time, you know, did Diablo and blah, 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 and everything. And boy, this game came and went. It just totally came and went. There's a saying, I think I've said this before, one of my favorite sayings of all time is that there's only two disappointments in life. There's only two disappointments in life. Waiting for something and then getting it. I'm paraphrasing there, but you get the idea, is that, you know, like, waiting for this game was more fun than actually playing it. And boy, this game really, oof, I think it was Oscar Wilde, by the way, and this game really, really disappointed me. You know, I just expected more, and it totally has disappeared. I wouldn't even mention the server problems they were having, massive server problems, you know, the pace, the way you pay for it, no one's quite sure. But I tell you, this game came out, got some mediocre reviews, and we never heard from it again. I'm kind of surprised, and I think, you know, I think the game is probably not doing that great. I'd like to see what their sales are. Anyhow, but that brings me back to the beginning, which is the best games of the year, and I mentioned sort of my favorites. But this is crazy, because, you know, I'm having the contest where I'm having everyone write to me, tell me what their favorite game of 2007 was. And I've gotten hundreds and hundreds of entries, and I don't think a single person has put down this game. Not one person. I've not seen this game on anyone's lists. I have not seen anyone mention this game once on any list of any type whatsoever. I haven't seen GameSpot yet. I'm sure it's going to be on their lists. But the favorite game, my number one game of 2007, by far, without a doubt, was Lord of the Rings Online. I cannot believe that this game is not getting better press. This game, first of all, it's done very well. I mean, when it first came out, it got really strong reviews. And that's actually what made me go play it, because I was surprised just how good reviews are. And since the game has come out, they have really polished this game and made it even better. This game does to World of Warcraft what World of Warcraft did to EverQuest. That's how strong of an endorsement I give this game. It is improved upon the MMO concept and the way you play MMOs in every way, shape, and form. Every single thing, I mean, it is a blatant ripoff of WoW, and people talk about it all the time. The game's like, you know, but you know what? WoW was kind of a blatant ripoff of EverQuest, you know, so it goes back and forth. But there's a lot in this game that you can, you know, point to and say, they did, wow, this isn't WoW, but man, they do this a lot better in this game. You know, I'll give you an example. One of the greatest things they did is grinding. You know, grinding is where you're just killing the same things over and over and over again. Well, they reward you in this game. It is amazing. It's the, and you actually like it. You actually have fun doing it. You get new titles. You get improvements. So if you kill, for instance, like 120 wargs anywhere in the game, you will get a slight increase to health. Things like that. So you will actually not mind grinding. And later, some of those, you know, pluses become pretty mighty. Like right now, we're grinding to get an improvement that'll let you heal like 3,000 hit points in one shot. And you have to kill like 250 hillmen, which is a ridiculous amount. So, but you know what? So me and my friends gather up and we go kill them. But other little things, like you can play this game however you want. If you want to play like a hardcore MMO, you can do that. If you want to go on and just craft, you can do that. If you just want to use the auction house, you can do that. If you want to go on and just play with two or three of your friends, this game is, there's no better game than this. There's three of my friends, four of us total, that play all the time, two or three times a week, and we just quest like crazy. The quests are all designed to be done in small groups, aka fellowships. There's some much larger quests. If you have a bigger fellowship, you're just able to do the, you know, the quests sooner. And not only that, they reward you. If you have the bigger your fellowship, you have fellowship maneuvers which reward you all coordinating. It basically plays like almost a deck of cards, is where if you stun a creature, all of a sudden a maneuver wheel comes up and you have four choices. And if I go first and I hit red, then you hit green. Next person hits yellow, yellow, and then blue. You know, a creature will appear like an ant and smash their heads in. Things like that. And so you have to coordinate with each other over voice chat, however you want to do it. So when that comes up and you only have a few seconds to decide, you can really turn the tide of battle. Or you don't want to do that at all. You don't have to. But it's little things like that. It's like every little aspect they sort of, you know, looked at and improved upon. And I won't even get into, oh, the graphics, which are fantastic. The size of the world is just right. It's not too big, not too small. The actual world itself, I mean, Lord of the Rings, how much better can you get than that? Plus, there's this thing, there's a million quests in the game, but there's an epic quest where you can actually go on the actual quest, which sort of follows the adventures of Frodo, and you help him out. You're like basically a helper on the side, kind of working with Aragorn, you know, helping out, finding out things for them to help them, you know, go on their adventure to throw the ring into Mount Doom. It is really, really well done. So it feels like an epic adventure. You can play it in a million different ways. The graphics are great. You can level up quite quickly in the game, which to me is great. I was recently with one of my characters. I was talking to my friends, and I think I have 5 days played. There's 50 levels, and my guy's level 35, you know, and that's pretty good. You know, in World of Warcraft, it takes about 12 days, about 10 to 12 days of solid playing to get a level 60 character. I know some of you guys are out there, oh, I can do it in 5 days, whatever. The average player can do it around that time. You know, in this game, it does not take that much time to, you know, really level up a character, which is nice. Oh, and something else I didn't even mention, the classes. I guarantee the first time you play this game, the classes are weird because you're like, okay, these are weirdest classes I've ever seen. And at first, you might not like them because they don't seem to really mesh. But when you play, classes are brilliant. The classes are designed, not only can they stand alone, but in group play, everyone really has their role. And I have not seen a game that plays better when you're together in a fellowship fighting as a group. This is probably the best MMO I've ever seen when it comes to group play, you know, including World of Warcraft. It brings it to the next level. And then finally, I will also mention one other thing about this game, which is they're always improving upon it. It's like they're always adding new material. They're always expanding it continuously. You know, there's a lot, this game is doing very well and it's getting a lot of word of mouth. And if you like MMOs, and if you are bored of World of Warcraft and, you know, are waiting for the next Conan or Warhammer Online to come out, give this game a try. The biggest negative with this game is some of the classes are a little boring to play, especially in the lower levels. And the grind, because every MMO has the grind, we call it, you know, where you just have to sort of, there's just not as much to do or, you know, whatever. Unfortunately, the grind seems to happen in the 20s, which is the worst time to have the grind by far. It's like between levels, I'd say 20 to 22, it's a real grind, because that's just when the game starts to get good. It opens up, you get into the lowlands, you get into this whole new area, and before you're in these areas that are really densely populated, and now you're in these areas that are really desolate with not much to do, and there's not as many quests, and you're sort of just like, okay, what's going on here? Yeah, and that's just, you know, just as you're really getting powerful, it starts the grind. But just get through it and then keep going, and the game just picks up. And right around level 23, 24, especially 24, 25, you'll get a ton more quests. You'll have more quests than you ever know what to do with, and the game really picks up after that. But seriously, give this game a try. If you want to look me up, I'm on Silverload. Write to me. I'll give you my character name. We're you know, actually looking for a few new people, hardcore players that can that can play on a fairly regular basis. But it is a great game, and I am stunned that more people don't put it on their game of the year. But Lord of the Rings Online, you probably heard me talk about it to death and sick of it. But seriously, greatest game of 2007, no doubt. And let's get to my review of Mass Effect.
Game review. Game review.
So Mass Effect for the Xbox 360 is probably the toughest game I've ever had to review or even talk about, because this game is a odd game. First of all, should you review this game against other BioWare games, or should you review it against other role-playing games? And I'm very curious when I read other people's reviews to sort of see how they angle the review, because against other BioWare games, I would say that this game is above average. But unfortunately, that's not good enough for them, in my opinion. I think that this should have been a much better game. Against other role-playing games, I'd say this game is way above average. So it's sort of like, where does this game relate? A perfect example is like Super Mario Sunshine. Here's a game that got a 92%. Super Mario Sunshine. Are you kidding me? I love platformers. I love the Mario game. Super Mario Sunshine stunk. That was a bad game. If that game was not called Super Mario, if it did not, I would go to the grave on this. If that game was not called Super Mario, and it did not have Mario in it, and Nintendo didn't release it, and it was the big release for the GameCube, that game, and if it was some other nameless character, that game would have gotten in the 60s, maybe in the 70s at best. It would have been seen as a competent but difficult platformer that had some interesting ideas, but it was overall kind of bland. But because it had Mario in it, suddenly it gets more points. So when I read these Mass Effect reviews, I'm wondering, okay, is this just an average role-playing game that people are putting on more emphasis because it's BioWare? Or is this a really, truly a good BioWare game? And again, why this review is so difficult is because it's both. So ironically, this game also got Mass Effect on the Metacritic is getting a 92%. So very high marks. Real quick, you know, if you want to know about the game, you pretty much know. It takes place in a couple hundred years in the future. You have to save the galaxy, blah, blah, blah. If you play other BioWare games, you have a standard party of 6 members. You can always choose 2 at a time to go with you. So your standard BioWare interaction between your party members, having them talk, having it where that you are actually going through and talking to your party members after every mission to find out more about their backstory, to find more about their history, to find new adventures. Again, this is where it's weird, because if you've played a BioWare game, this is the exact same. They've done this in every single BioWare game that they've ever done, okay? If KOTOR, you did this in KOTOR. Jade Empire, you did this in Jade Empire. Baldur's Gate 2, you did this in Baldur's Gate 2. You know, they have the same formula. And I'm just wondering, it's like, okay, you know, I don't know. It's like they're repeating themselves ad infinitum. Like, here I am, I'm playing this game, and it's exactly the same as KOTOR. In those aspects, it plays identical. So, you know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's hard to say. It's like, I am enjoying it, and I love to hear their backstories. So, but, you know, it's like, okay, it's the same thing. I'm just going to talk to them after every mission. I get a little bit more information. I find a little bit more, you know, but I guess if it works, stick with it. You have 3 different powers. Sounds just like KOTOR. By the way, KOTOR is Knights of the Old Republic. For those of you who have no idea what I'm talking about, you have combat, you have tech, you have magic. They call it biotech. It's magic, okay? So your standard stuff, you can either be like all combat or all technology or a hybrid, like half technology, half magic, so on. So, you know, you learn new abilities, you get more powerful. Again, this is all standard stuff, so it's hard to say. It's like, all right, if I played any other BioWare game, everything I've seen is standard. I've done this all before, but if you haven't, and if you're new to this, this is all probably really new to you. So, again, none of this is bad per se. In fact, this is all, I would just say, standard fare. So, where does this excel upon the other games? Well, let's get to that. Okay, the story. The story is good. The story is really good. Even for BioWare, the story is quite good. The voiceovers are fantastic. The characters themselves are really, really fascinating. As usual, I'm not going to give anything away, but you always seem to be riddled. You always seem to be hooked up with characters who are always a lot more than they seem and have really fascinating backstories, and Mass Effect does not disappoint with that. And in fact, I would say that Mass Effect was one of the very best books I've ever read. And that's one of the best parts. There's a part of this game is that as you play through it, there's a thing called the Codex. And the Codex is an encyclopedia that tells you about the world. And you will have more fun reading the Codex than playing the game. Now, once again, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because, boy, I sure enjoy sitting there reading about this world and reading about these races and their history and their culture. And it's just fascinating to see how they envision this world, and they really go through great lengths to explain how the technology works. Like, they explain, well, this is how combat works in space, and this is how, you know, the shields are recharged, this is how, you know, faster than light travel works. Like, you can tell these guys really, really sat down and thought this stuff out, and they explain it all in extreme detail. But I'm sitting here going, wow, this is great. But you know what? I'm sitting here and I'm reading. So this is a really great book. I love this. But is it a game? Well, you know, let's keep going. It's a great setting. The graphics are gorgeous, especially the character animations are just, you know, really raised the bar quite a bit. The character animations are as everything that everyone said it was going to be. And there's a lot of cool side missions, I will say that. So, you know, and again, most of the stuff you probably could tell before even I did the review, because you probably read reviews and know about the game. But let's talk about the bad, all right? And because there's a fair amount of bad. And the bad all centers around kind of the gameplay. And that's why I have issues with this game. Okay, one of the big things is, you know, you start off the game and you are a, you know, super intergalactic warrior going out to save the universe. And what do? You get one of the greatest ships they have, and you go to planets and you survey them for minerals. And then you go on the planet and you drive around and survey for more minerals. And then you do this again and again and again and again and again and again. And okay, you get the idea. You spend more time doing surveys than you do action-adventure. In fact, I actually calculated it. I spent 15 hours, and I'm still not... I just couldn't do every single side mission. I still didn't see every single world in the game. I did almost all of them. I'd say like 85%. I spent 15 hours just driving around planets, scanning for gold and minerals and heavy metals, and that's it. Okay? Epic adventure... Driving around, you know, a survey vehicle and scanning planets does not equal epic adventure to me. And you will do this a lot in this game. You don't have to do it, but, you know, that's a major part of the game. And I'm going to say, you know what, if you're going to put that much effort into this aspect of the game and make it that you have this much time that can be spent at the game, then it should be judged. It should not be ignored. If you just do the main quest and totally ignore this stuff, you do not have to do any of it. But it is in there, and it does take up a large portion of the game, even if you do some of the side quests. The main quest. The side quests, there's a lot of them. They're all exactly the same. Let me tell you how they all work. They all work the exact same way. You go to a star system. There will be one planet you could land on. All the other systems you can scan, most likely. You go around. You scan them all. You find the planet. You land on it. There's something to investigate. You drive around. You go investigate it. You shoot some bad guys. You find the bunker or something underground. They all have the exact same layout, more or less. There's only like 3 or 4 layouts. They all have the exact same layouts. So you fight the exact same way. You know exactly where the people are going to be. You can see them on your radar and such. So it's really no big deal. You go kill them. You get some rewards. Repeat. Do that over and over and over and over again. Okay? Yes, they mix it up a little. Sometimes at the end, instead of killing the bad guy, you actually get to talk to the bad guy before you kill him. But otherwise, it's exactly the same. I don't know why more people are not harping on this. Why I'm the only person who said, wow, why is every bunker exactly the same in this game? Why couldn't they put a little bit more effort into this? Okay, that drove me nuts. The combat itself is broken, okay? I don't care. Well, you can say anything you want. If you play someone who is heavily into technology and you don't put a lot into being able to shoot people, then you will just not be able to do well in combat. It's just that simple. In fact, if you're going to play this game, I will tell you right now, be a soldier. Either be a soldier or be a soldier slash magic user. Okay, technology is easy. Anyone can do technology, and if one of your characters, one of your subordinates has technology, their technology will supersede your technology. So if they're really good at lockpicking and you stink at it, it doesn't matter, because when you do it, you use their skill set. So why would you ever want to do that? And so just be a soldier, because then you can actually use everything. I don't want to tell you, every single one of my friends that has played this game has had the same story, and it came to me too, same exact thing. They're fighting a boss battle. Their other two guys die right away. They are fighting something that's way too hard for them, and then they die. And they have to do it again and 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 again. I had to do one area for 2 hours. I had to do it over and over again. I had another friend who was doing it for like 3 days. Okay, finally he gave up. He finally made the setting too easy. But then he died, and he forgot he didn't save his game, so he kept trying to do it over and over again. But then he realized, oh, wait a second, it's still on medium because I didn't save it after I did saved it to easy. So then he went back, changed it to easy, and then he was able to get through it. But you know what? You shouldn't have to be able to have to do something, 20 times to get past it. The AI in the game is very good, and if you don't turn it, it's very good if you turn it on all the way. But at the same time, they're so good that they can do all the killing for you. You can walk into a room, and if you outfit your guys, your two assistants, squad mates, as pure fighters, you can walk into a room, sit back, and they'll kill everyone for you. It's sort of a weird dichotomy. I want them to do the fighting, but I don't want them to do everything. Knights of the Old Republic had the perfect balance. Other things that made me wonder about this game and how whether it was finished. Obviously the repetitive nature of a lot of the planets. There's pop-in all over the place, which drove me nuts. The loading time is crazy. Although I will give them kudos. At least you're in an elevator and things can happen in the elevator, so it's not that bad. But man, I've never thought I'd see an elevator in an epic science fiction role-playing game before. And, as I said, the game feels kind of unfinished. I love sniping. In fact, this is my biggest problem I have with the game, is that whenever I play one of these games, I love to snipe. You can play a sniper, and the whole reason I took that is so I can actually use that ability. There's only two character classes that can use the snipe ability, so I chose it. I chose the combat technology guy, which later I found out was probably a waste because not everyone could do technology, and their technology supersedes mine anyhow, so if they're better at it, so why would I bother investing anything into mine? So I shouldn't have bothered with that. And then the sniping is all over the place. Like, you try to snipe, it looks like you're drunk, okay? It looks like, and I'm not talking about 2 or 3 beers drunk, I'm talking about 2 or 3 kegs drunk, okay? If I'm trained in this, I should be able to hold the gun even a little bit, but no, you're not. You can't hold it. You have to earn special powers that eventually allow you to stabilize your gun. Eventually, you can get so many enhancements and so much added to your gun that maybe it actually will stop wobbling and you can actually pull off a shot. So, again, that feels like unbalanced gameplay. It feels like, oh, the game was, they made the sniper rifle way too powerful and they had to sort of dumb it down. Otherwise, it would just, destroy some of the gameplay element. Things like the pop-in, things like weird loading screens, things like repeating elements, all that screams to me that this game could have used another year in the burner. But I will say that, even with the negatives, that the story and the characters and the actual world of Mass Effect is so fantastic that you have to play this game. I would just keep all of that in mind, is that, if you're having trouble with the combat, just give up, go to easy. If you're going to play, just play a soldier or play soldier magic user, you will have a much better time. Trust me on this, because a soldier can use every single weapon. If you play something like a technology guy, it doesn't really matter. You can, if you even play, even with some of the magic, it's the same thing. But at least if you're a soldier, you can use all 4 weapon types, and it's much more fun that way. So this game, I would say, story gets a 10 out of 10. Great, fantastic story. The gameplay, I'd give it like a 6 or 7 out of 10. It is not broken and terrible. And I'll put it this way. The story was more than enough to keep me going, but I just couldn't take those survey missions anymore. It just drove me nuts. But I will say, when Mass Effect 2 comes out, again, I'm looking forward to that. But again, it wasn't everything I thought a BioWare game can and should be. And I just think they've not been able to replicate what they've done with Knights of the Old Republic, which is really, really a shame. If you want to play a truly great game, get Knights of the Old Republic. Yeah, I know, the first 10 hours is terrible, and it drives you nuts. I had to play the game 3 times before I got into it. But once it gets going, oh boy, it gets going. And I wouldn't worry about a sequel coming out, because boy, did that game do so well. So Mass Effect, it's a great game with some fairly big flaws, but I'd still say get it.
Name that game!
So now I have named that game. So everyone knows that the last few sessions of Gaming Steve, I've had a contest where if you send me your favorite game of 2007 and your name on the forum, you'll automatically be entered to win either some free gaming swag, which is third place. Second place is a free game valued at $60 or less American, where basically any game that I can buy in America for $60 or less, I will get, even if you live somewhere where the American dollar is total crap, which seems to be everywhere in the world. And the grand prize is a next-gen game system, PlayStation 3, the 40-gig version, a Wii, an Xbox 360, or a PSP, or a DS. Any of those you want. Free? That's right, totally free. And I will have this game, this contest, one more week, and next week I will pick the winner. So all you need to do, once again, write to me at game@gamingsteve.com, that email address, game@gamingsteve.com. You can only enter in once. Put down what is your favorite game of 2007, your forum name, and why. And that's it. That's all you have to do. And it's random. I'll totally just pick out randomly who wins. And then next week, I will announce the winners. I will say, because of the holidays and Christmas, the show will probably be later next week. It won't come out on Tuesday. It'll probably come out later in the week. But it will be next week where I announce all the winners. So get your name in. Tell your friends. Please do. Get everyone involved. And then we'll get to our normal Name That Game feature. But until then, enter and you can win. And let's get to show mail. So show mail is where I will answer any of your questions, game-related. I'm kind of surprised. I used to get so much show mail that I'd have to, like, sort of prune it. Yeah, I'd have to sort of prune it. That's the word I was looking for. Prune the mail and just pick the best ones. But I only got one question this week, so I'm going to answer it. And you're going to get a lot of time because you were the only person who wrote me. But if you have a question, send it to me at... you can send it to game@gamingsteve.com. That's fine. Or feedback@gamingsteve.com. Actually, send it to feedback@gamingsteve.com because that goes to a different folder. You can send me an audio question. Here's a secret. I will always play an audio question. So no matter what you send me, 99.9% of the time, if you send me an audio question that's 30 seconds approximately or less, I will play it on the air no matter what, unless it's totally stupid. But let's see what this question is. Danny wrote me, says, "Hey Steve, glad to see you're back. Love the podcast. If you can choose any game to have on Xbox Live Arcade, what would it be? Personally, I'd love to see Ticket to Ride come to Xbox Live Arcade. Thanks, Danny Ham from Melbourne, Australia." I'll tell you, there's one thing I've noticed is a huge number of Gaming Steve listeners, if not most of them, appear to be from overseas. So I wonder why that is. Anyhow, thank you, Dan, for writing me, or Danny. That's my brother's name, by the way. Xbox Live Arcade, well, which game would I think is perfect? Well, Ticket to Ride, I agree, would be good, and actually would be an excellent Xbox Live Arcade game, but you can already play that on the PC. So as much as I would like to see that, you could already do that. So you could just buy the game and play it against your friends just as long as they have a PC. So that's sort of been done. But I would say one of my favorite games, and this is the best part, it is coming out on Xbox Live Arcade, is Talisman. Talisman is a crazy board game. One of my favorite games. After growing up in high school, we used to come home every single day and play Talisman every single day. Then Cosmic Encounter. But we played Talisman to death. And the game is totally crazy. There's way too much luck involved. The game shifts wildly between you're winning and beating everyone to you are totally poor and turned into a toad. But it's sort of a weird fantasy game that is... It's hard to explain, quite frankly. They just came out with the fourth edition. If you're into board games, I would say pick it up. You will not be disappointed. Just don't expect deep strategy. This is a party game. It's a game where, you know, as I said, you can be winning and you could be in last place and win the game quite easily. It's totally nuts, but it's got a ton of flavor and it's a fun game if everyone's like really into sort of being into their characters and reading all the encounters and sort of talking about what's going on in the game, then it's a lot of fun. But if you're into deep strategy, like playing Risk 2010 or something, then this is probably not the game for you. But this will be a very fun game. I'm really looking forward to this game coming on Xbox Live Arcade sometime next year. I would say any game, really, any board game, sorry, I think will be really good. And we're going to start seeing that a lot more. You know, when Greg was in charge of Xbox Live Arcade, he left to go to PopCap. He was a really big board game aficionado, so that's why we saw Settlers of Catan and Carcassonne come online. And Carcassonne, by the way, is a great game. I play that almost every day at lunch with my friends. We play Carcassonne. We play most of the expansions, but oof, what a great game. Those games are a lot of fun. I would just wish we'd see more of those. You know, those are the type of games I like to play. You know, I guess, you know, but you know, the problem is, you know, when you see games like Pac-Man and Robotron and all those, yeah, those are okay. The problem with that is that you can get those on other platforms pretty easily. Pac-Man, although, yeah, it's nice you can play it on Xbox Live, but I can play it on the PC, so who really cares? You know, it's okay, it was one more place, but I really don't care that I can play it there. Other games, like, yeah, there's a lot of those, like, independent games that are small that are coming out, and I do feel that it's important that these games are there and that it is nice, but at the same time, one of my issues with some of those games is that some of them just aren't all that good. That's the first problem. And it's also, you know, it's weird. I remember when the Xbox first came out and everyone was playing, you know, the Xbox Live Arcade, and we're playing these, you know, $5, $10 games on Xbox Live, and we're thinking, wow, here we have this crazy, the most advanced system that's out right now, this $400 system, and we're playing, you know, a $5 downloadable game on this crazy system. You know, here I am playing Robotron on this system, or, you know, or who knows what. That's kind of the way I feel with some of these games, is that they just aren't up to the standard of what they should be. When you have a board game, it uses Xbox Live's interactive features really, really well. It allows you to play, you know, a board game in a, you know, in the same way it can be played, only done over the internet. So maybe you don't agree with me, probably a lot of people don't, but personally, that's what I like to see. And it could be new board games. Like I said, that Coldcept Saga that's coming out in February, I'm really interested. It's not an Xbox Live Arcade. That's Xbox Live game, not Xbox Arcade. I'm really interested because that kind of combines magic with board gaming, and that's the type of stuff that I really like to play online. You know, I'm not a big like multiplayer Halo fan. And also, by the way, Uno, I believe, it's definitely in the top three. I think it might be the best-selling Xbox Live arcade game by far. Huge. Uno does huge. It's just to show you that, you know, it really lends itself well to that type of style of gameplay. So that's all I had right now. So if you have a question, you can write to me at feedback@gamingsteve.com, and I'll answer your question. So let's get to final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
So why is it absolutely impossible for me to do a short show? I had almost nothing. I didn't have an interview because everyone's away this, like, the next couple of weeks. I'm setting up a few in January, but right now I got nothing going on when it comes to interview-wise. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, I only got a couple of news stories. I'll do a real short show. And it's long. Again, it is impossible for me to do a short show, and I just don't know why. I really wish I could. I know people like my long shows, and I kind of like them too, but I secretly wish I can make the shows a little shorter so that you guys can digest them and maybe go to a little bit bigger audience, but I guess I'm my own worst enemy. But seriously, check Lord of the Rings Online out. I am devastated that this game is not getting the kudos it deserves, but it is doing very well. In fact, if you look on the MMO boards, you'll find that it's actually right after World of Warcraft in popularity. It's very quietly, actually very, very quietly doing well. But and give it a try, because It's funny. The games I always seem to like are the ones that I have to play more than once. This game I actually had to play twice because I chose a class. I chose the Lore Master, here's where I like the game. There's only 5 wizards in the world of Lord of the Rings Online, and that's it. So you can't play a wizard. You can play a Lore Master, which is basically a wizard. And I thought, it'd be fun to play a wizard. I didn't really like I stopped playing. Then I played a defender type character that's a tank. And again, I didn't really love him, so I stopped playing. But then I finally got to play a pure offensive character that can dual wield and just do damage, more damage, and damage on top of damage. And oh boy, I love that character. That is a really good character. I would just say, and the game plays so differently depending on type of the character you play. Just give it a couple of tries. Play every type. There's the hunter. A lot of people really enjoy the hunter. The burglar is really great, especially if you have a group of people. The minstrel. I have a friend who plays the minstrel, and we basically couldn't live without this guy. The minstrel is the healer class. He is great at playing the minstrel. Plus, he can solo and do very well on his own. It plays very similar, I'd say, as to the priest in World of Warcraft, that you can both solo as well as heal the entire party. But yeah, this is a game that deserves to be checked out. They also have a big sale going on right now. I think you download or get the game for like next to nothing. And it only costs $10 right now a month, I think. They're having some Christmas special. So now's the time to check it out. And again, Silver Lotus, the server I'm on, if you want to see. But I do see the game every time I play. It's getting bigger and bigger. It's getting more and more popular. So, they haven't built the game all the way to Mordor just yet. They did add an encounter, a large raid instance against the Balrog. I have not done it personally, but damn, it looks cool. If you go to YouTube and just check out some of the videos, I can't wait to actually get enough equipment powerful enough to actually take on the Balrog. But this is a fantastic game. So that's what I'm going to be doing this next couple of months, really. And until then, have a good holiday season for whatever you guys celebrate. Hope you get lots and lots of video games. Hope you get everything you guys want. And hope you don't have your Guitar Hero 3 sold on eBay like someone else had have happened to him. Until then, I'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.
Listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, maybe you should see someone about that carpal tunnel syndrome.